Good morning. I'd like to discuss the mitzvah of Emunah today. The Rambam in Hilchos Yisod HaTorah, Perek Aleph, Halacha Aleph, it's page 35 in your source books, or again, if anyone needs new source books, they're up here. Page 1 of the new version of the source books. I just printed them from today's forward, and 35 of the original. The Rambam writes, Yisod HaYisodos Ve'amud HaChachmos Leida Shiyesh Sham Matsui Rishon. The foundation of all foundations and the pillar of wisdom is to know that there is a first existent. The word Leida here is very significant. The Rambam here is discussing the mitzvah of Emunah, but he does not use the word Lahamin, rather he uses the word Leida, to know. V'hu Mamtzi Kol Nimtza, Kadosh Baruch Hu is the cause for all that exists. It's not just that he created them, but he is their constant cause of existence. They are dependent existences. V'chol nimtzayim mishamayim v'aretz u'ma shebeinam lo nimtzu ela me'amitas himatzo. And all that exists only exists because of the truth of his existence. V'im ya'alel adah shehu eino matzoi, ein davar acher yachol lihimatzos. Were to be the case that he didn't exist, chas v'shalom, he's not entertaining that possibility realistically, but he's simply demonstrating the extent to which God's existence is a necessary and independent existence. And thus, were it to be the case that he didn't exist, so then nothing else could exist. Ein davar acher yachol lihimatzos. However, were it to be the case, if you were to imagine that other things besides him don't exist, everything else doesn't exist, he would continue to exist, he would not be negated by their negation. Meaning to say that God's existence is necessary existence, it's true in all possible worlds, it couldn't be otherwise, as opposed to all other existences which are accidental in the sense that, for example, we happen to exist, but it didn't have to be that way. There was a time that we didn't exist, that we won't exist. We don't exist, as it were, in all possible worlds. Shekol nimtzaim tzrichim lo, all that exists depend upon him. V'hu baruch hu eino tzarich lahem. But he is not dependent upon anything else. V'lo lechad mehem. Lefikach, Ein amitaso ke amitas echad mehem. The truth, his truth is not like the truth of anything else, meaning to say that his truth, in the sense that he is a necessary existence, the truth of his existence, which is necessary, is not like anything else. Hu shanevi omer, v'ashem elokim emes. God is true. A lot of things are true. In what sense is God true in a way that nothing else is true? Like we explained, that his existence is necessary. It couldn't be otherwise. Hu levado emes, ve'ein la'acher emes ka'amito. V'hu sha'Torah omeres, ein od milvado. Kilomar, ein sham matzui emes milvado kamoso. What do we mean to say that when we say ein od milvado, there's nothing besides him? Does that mean to say that nothing else actually exists? No, it doesn't mean that nothing actually exists. Other things might exist, but all other existences are dependent existence. They only exist because he continuously wills that they exist, as opposed to his existence, which is a necessary existence. It's interesting. A couple of days ago, Rabbi Tursky talked about this after Mincha, and he was noting that this is very similar, if not identical, to what the Nefesh HaChaim writes when the Nefesh HaChaim describes the idea that Mechadish Betuvah B'chol Yom Tamid Ma'aseh V'Reishis, that creation was not just a one-time event and then things that were created continue to exist because they were initially created. L'mashal, if a carpenter creates a table, so he is indeed the creator, but the table continues to exist independently of that carpenter. Even if the carpenter dies, the table could continue to exist. God's relationship to the world is one of constant creation. Mechadish betuvo b'chol yom tabid ma'aseh v'reishis. And the Rambam seems to adopt the same position, like he says over here, v'hu mamtzi kol nimtza. It's not just that he created it, but he is the constant cause for their existence. And I asked Rabbi Tursky that there's a, in the Mor Nevuchim, the Rambam seems to describe a position similar to the Nefesh HaChayim and reject it. A view of certain Muslim philosophers who believe that the world was is constantly being recreated. And we'll perhaps return to that question, how is the Rambam different than that position that he rejects? And is that position that he rejects the same as Nefesh HaChayim? But what's important to note for now, for our purposes today, is that even the Rambam certainly agrees that the existence of everything and anything besides him is a dependent existence that demands or depends on his constantly willing to it to exist, and it's not in any way a dependent existence. Hamatsuya zehu Eloha ha'olam, Adon kol ha'aretz, v'hu ha'manhig ha'galgal b'koach she'en lo ketz v'tachlis, b'koach she'en lo hefsek, sha'galgal sovev tamid, v'i'asher she'asuv b'lo misavev, v'hu baruchu ha'misavev oso, b'lo yad u'v'lo guf. V'yedias davar zeh, mitzvas asei, she'nemar anochi Hashem elokecha. So knowing this, meaning to say knowing what I just wrote in this previous halacha, is a mitzvah saseh, the mitzvah of anochi. Once again, note the word yedia, knowing this. And essentially what the Rambam just wrote, knowing that, is the mitzvah of anochi Hashem Elokecha, the mitzvah that is known as emuna. So the Rambam is basically telling us that to be a proper Jew, you must know, leida, certain things. Knowing these things is mandated by the mitzvah of Anochi, and thus these are what the Rambam calls Yesod HaYesodos. Now, what exactly does the Rambam mean when he says to know? Does that mean that you have to be able to prove that it is so? The Rambam in Mor Nevuchim offers four proofs for the existence of God. Does one have to be able to prove the existence of God to be mekayim the mitzvah of Anochi, or simply leida? The implication here, and we'll see that he states this explicitly in the Mor Nevuchim, is that you don't have to be able to prove it. One can be mekayim the mitzvah of Anochi, of knowing certain things, even without the ability to prove them. But what then is meant by leida, to know? It's interesting that in the Sefer HaMitzvos, the mitzvah is not formulated as leida, but ha-mitzvah rishona hi ha-tzivui asher tzivanu leha-amin ha-elokos. This is mitzvah saseh aleph. However, as you know, the Sefer HaMitzvos was not written in Hebrew, it was written in Arabic. The translation of leha-amin is the translation of Reb Shmuel ibn Tibon, and that was the standard translation that was presumed for quite a while. However, the truth is, if you look at the translations of Rav Kapach or Rav Chaim Heller, they believe that the correct translation should be Leida here as well. And the fact that in Mishneh Torah, as we saw, he formulates the mitzvah as Leida, also in the Minyan HaMitzvos at the beginning of Mishneh Torah, he also writes mitzvah Rishona, mitzvos asei Leida, she'isham eloka, would seem to support their position that perhaps a more accurate translation would be Leida. Now, I saw an interesting point recently from Rav Shach in the Avi Ezri on this halacha, quoting from Rav Chaim Soloveitchik. Rav Shach writes that along the lines of what we saw, what we considered last week from Rav Ochanan, that knowledge of God's existence is intuitive and obvious since nothing else could account for existence of our world other than God. And he writes that with respect to knowledge of God's existence, then the term yidiyah is correct. What then is the role of emunah? Is there a mitzvah of emunah according to the Rambam? So he says a fascinating thing. This is on page 36 of your books. He writes that he asked this question to Rav Velvel, the Brisker Rav, who said that he asked this question to Reb Chaim, v'amar li shegam hu amar al zeh v'shal zos la'aviv hagrach zatzal v'amar lo shevadai ad kama shesechel ha'adam maga'as hu muskal v'ein zu emuna v'hi yedia. In Achinami, something that you could know or prove is not emuna. Emuna means faith. Faith implies something, belief in something that you can't prove or you can't know. And therefore, indeed, with respect to the existence of God, the correct term is yedia. Does that mean that there's no room for emuna? So he writes, no. There is a mitzvah of emuna as well. Rav Chaim's formulation reminded me of a famous quote from Rav Nachman of Breslov, that b'makom asher sham gvulo shel haseichel sham matchila ha'emuna. Emuna begins where seichel ends. But what room is there for emuna then within the Rambam's conception? Again, it may be that it doesn't exist. But what I think that Rav Chaim was getting at is an interesting point within the Rambam, which is that while it is the case that knowledge of God's existence is something which can be proven, there are other things which we must believe in that cannot be proven. Just for example, consider the difference in presentation between the Rambam's presentation as to how we know that God exists versus the Rambam's presentation of how we know that the Torah is true. When it comes to God's existence, the Rambam, as I mentioned, said this is something that we can know and to which he offers proof. When it comes to knowledge of Matan Torah and the truth of Torah, the Rambam, this is on page 36, deals with this not in Parak Aleph of Hilchos Yisod HaTorah, what we were reading before, but in Parak Ches. Moshe Rabbeinu lo ha'aminu bo Yisrael mipnei ha'osos she'asa shamanin al pi osos yesh belibo dofi she'efshar she'yasa ha'os belat v'kishuf ela kol ha'osos she'asa b'midbar lefi atzorech asan lo lehavi raya l'nevua. The Rambam writes, again we're on page 36, that the basis of our emuna, here he uses the word ha'aminu, the basis of our emuna, or the Jewish people's emuna in Moshe Rabbeinu, was not because of the miracles which he performed. After all, miracles leave a person with a tinge of doubt. Perhaps this was magic. Rather, the purpose of the miracles, at least the miracles in the Midbar, were because there was a need. They served a purpose. Note how he says the miracles in the Midbar. This was probably not the case with respect to the miracles in Mitzrayim. Perhaps we'll get back to that another time. There, the Torah pretty clearly tells us that their purpose was to teach us that God exists. L'man teidun ki ani Hashem, or that there's Hashkacha. L'man teidun ki ani Hashem b'karav ha'aretz, or L'man teidun ki ein kamoni b'kol ha'aretz. But at least the Nisim in the Midbar were practical in nature. So if the miracles did not serve as the basis of our emuna in Moshe, so what then was the basis? Uvameh eminu bo, meaning to say, what caused them to have absolute emuna? B'mamad har Sinai, she'inenu ra'u v'lo zar, v'oznenu sham'u v'lo acher, ha'ish v'hakolos v'halapidim. There we saw, we experienced the Eish, the Kolos, v'hunigash el ha'arafel, v'hakol midaber elav, v'anu shomim, Moshe, Moshe, leich emor lahem kach v'kach, V'chein hu omer panim b'fanim diber Hashem imachem. V'ne'amar v'lo es avoseichem karas Hashem es abris hazos. So Rambam writes that the basis of Emunah is the revelation at Sinai, mass prophecy. Now you might say, well, why is that different than a miracle? Maybe that was also a act of magic. So apparently, and again, this is something that I'd like to consider maybe a little later today, if not another time, but apparently the experience of prophecy or the experience that they had at Sinai left room for no doubt. It was not simply a miracle in the sense that there was this booming voice in which they heard, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, in which case you're right, it would be no different than any other miracle, but there was something else. There was something fundamentally different of the with respect to the experience at Sinai, which left a person with no doubt. It wasn't the miracle Shabbat, but it was the experience of hearing HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as it were, that left them without any doubts. We'll return to this point. So that's a good question. Apparently that the Rambam says at least someone who experiences that will be left with no doubt. Just like when someone experiences Nevuah, they are confident that this is Nevuah. It's not just a dream. And that experience leaves a person without any doubt. In other words, there's certainty, at least for someone who experiences it. It's hard for us to relate to that, having never experienced prophecy, and not at least remembering Ma'amad Har Sinai. But the Rambam here writes that what we experienced then was something fundamentally different. And again, I acknowledge we haven't fully answered the question, but we'll God willing, get back to that point. So the Rambam does not make that point explicitly, but it seems to be presumed, and certainly that point is made explicitly by many other thinkers like the Khuzari and the like, who stress that point. So the point, though, that I want to make here is that we see within the Rambam that there is Yediyah and there's Emunah. Yediyah is something that you know independently, that we can deduce philosophically or logically, whereas Emunah is something that we know with certainty, but not because it can be proven, but because of something else. In this case, let's say the Emunah in Torah being Emes is the experience of Matan Torah. Now, again, that's not to say that our belief in the Torah's veracity is irrational. Quite the opposite. The Rambam thinks that everything that the Torah asks of us to do is rational. Rather, just as L'masha L'mah Davar Domeh, if I ask any of you, did George Washington exist and was he the first president? So you would probably say yes. And if I asked you, are you certain? You would say yes. And if I asked you if it was rational to presume that he existed, you would say yes. Yet it's not something that can be proven in the philosophical sense. The point, though, is that there is so much evidence that he did exist, that he wasn't just someone that was made up after he died, that it becomes quite rational to believe with certainty that, in fact, he did exist, even though nobody has ever seen him. Probably none of us have even seen the firsthand evidence. But nevertheless, it's rational. So alachas kama v'kama, belief in something like Torah Misinai, the Rambam says, is rational, is reasonable, it can be certain, even if it can't be proven in the philosophical sense, like our knowledge that God exists can be proven. Now, is it important to have proof? So the Rambam writes, in the beginning of Hilchos Avodah Zarah, bottom of page 36, going on to page 37, the Rambam discusses the early history of Avram Avinu, and he writes first, actually, how the world came to believe in polytheism, how idolatry became so widespread, how it evolved, which is a strange thing, if there was one point when everybody did believe, and he has a theory. And then the Rambam writes, Akevan shenigmal etan zeh, hischil shotet v'da'ato, v'hu katan, v'hischil lachshov b'yom uv'alayla. V'ya tameya, heyach efshar sheye hagalgal hazeh noheg tamid. V'lo yihye lo manhig umi yisavev oso. So Avram, as a young child, began to wonder. You know, young children are very good at asking tough theological questions. They get a little older, they go to school, they stop asking the hard questions. But when they're young, they actually do ask these types of questions, and Avram was among them. As we mentioned last week, there was quite a long time between Avram Avinu's early questioning and his firm and concrete conviction that God existed, according to the Rambam. This was a long journey. But when he was very young, he already started wondering, how could it be that all this could exist without there being a God? V'lo haya lo melamed v'lo modia davar ela mushka b'or kazdim bein ovdei kochavim hatipshim v'aviv imo v'chol ha'am ovdei kochavim v'hu ovedi mahem v'libo mishotet u'mevin ad she'sig derech ha'emes v'evin kav ha'tzedek mitvunaso ha'nechona v'yada, again yediya, sheyesh sham Eloha echad v'hu manhig ha'galgal v'hu bara ha'kol v'ein b'chol ha'nimtza Eloha chutz mimenu v'yada shekol ha'olam to'im. So the Rambam thought about this question, about the movement of the spheres. He used to ask day and night, how is it possible that the sphere should continue to revolve without having anyone controlling it? Who is causing it to revolve? Surely it does not cause itself to revolve. And it was this very question that led him to the knowledge that God existed. Rambam's version of Avram's proof is over here, is one of the four proofs that he mentions in the Mor Nevuchim. The spinning spheres that Rambam is referring to reflect the Rambam's Aristotelian conception of the universe. The same argument could be made without relating to spheres. The Chovos Alvavos, for example, in Shar Bechina Perk Vav, write simply that just as it is obvious that a poem on paper was intentionally written by an author and not simply a result of spilled ink, so too it's obvious that if a world exists, there must have been a creator. And while we would no longer phrase the argument in terms of spinning spheres, the basic point of the argument, of the argument by design, a teleological argument or a cosmological argument, still exists today. In a couple of minutes, we'll consider the extent to which it does exist today. Is this an argument that still holds water, or perhaps it's been rejected in the 19th century by Kant and Hume, and we have to look towards other means for faith? So we'll return to that question a little later. The fact that Avram Avinu came to an awareness of God based off of the argument of design, the teleological argument, is not made up by the Rambam. The Medrash expresses the idea as well in the source below on page 37. Amar Reb Yitzchak, Mashal Echad She'over Mimakom L'Makom V'Ra'a Bira Achas Dolakas. Amar Tomer Shabira Zu V'Lo Manhig. There was a person who was traveling from place to place, and he saw an illuminated palace, or perhaps a burning palace. And he wondered, is it possible that this palace lacks a manhig, a director? Heitzitzalav bal habira, amar lo, anihu bal habira. Kach, lefishaya avinu Avram omer, tomer sha'olam azeh belo manhig, heitzitzalav HaKadosh Baruch Hu, v'amar lo, anihu bal ha'olam. Essentially, this is what Rambam writes, again using different terminology, that Avram's awareness of the existence of God stems from his having asked, Tomar Sheha'olam below Manhig. In the Mor Nevuchim, the Rambam writes that we find the prophets also arguing in favor of this type of argument. Yeshayahu, for example, says, "Su'uma rome nechem ure'u mi vara'ela." What was Yeshayahu telling them? Look at the world, look at the nature, look at the heavens, and see, mi bara'ela. If you examine the world, you will come to an awareness that God exists. Now, so far, we have been considering the concept of proof with respect to an argument that might be offered to a non-believer. What about someone who already believes? Is there a value in seeking proof if I already believe that God exists? For Avram, it was necessary, because Avram started from a point, from a place of non-belief. What about if I'm starting from a place of belief? The Rambam writes, still, even if someone already believes, proof serves as a very valuable tool. The Rambam has a fascinating Gemara, understanding of the Gemara in Makos, Chaf Dalet Amud Aleph. The Gemara there states that the first two of the Ten Commandments was stated by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Torah Tziva Lanu Moshe, the Gematria 611, two of the mitzvos, Anochi and Loiyah, were said by the Ribbono Shel Olam. So Moshe taught us Torah, 611, but Anochi and Loiyah were Mipi HaGvura Shma'um. Shmanum. The Rambam actually uses this Gemara in Sefer Mitzvos to support his point that Emunah should be counted as one of the 613 Mitzvos as opposed to the view of the Bahag, because clearly the Gemara presumes that Anochi is in fact a Mitzvah. Now, the Rambam in the Mor Nevuchim has a fascinating and very surprising understanding of this Gemara. This is on page 38 in your source books. And the Rambam writes that we should not understand this Gemara so literally. When it says that Anochi and Loiyah were mipi HaGvura Shma'anum, that doesn't literally mean that we had a prophetic vision in which we heard Anochi and Loiyah in the same manner that a prophet hears a prophecy. That would be impossible. Why? The Rambam understands that prophecy is something that is only possible for someone that is on the madrega, both intellectually and with respect to their piety, for nevuah. Nevuah is, by definition, impossible for someone who is not on such a madrega. That notion is a little bit surprising at first. Why is it that we can't just say that, well, there was a one-time exception? That is, in fact, the view of the Ran. The Ran, in his drashos, in the fifth drasha, claims, agrees to the Rambam's view that nevuah is only possible for someone who is on a madrega of nevuah, but Matan Torah was the exception to that. The Rambam, though, seems to see that as axiomatic. He derives this from the Gemara in Nedarim. The Gemara says, "Am Rabbi Yochanan, Ein Hakadosh Baruch Hu Mashrish Chinaso El Al Chacham Gibor VeAshir VeAnav VeKulam Imoshe." The Rambam understands that Ashir does not mean Ashir in the sense of wealthy, but rather Ashir BeYedia and Gib. The Rambam.
Doesn't the Rambam say that the Rambam?
The Rambam does write about why that might be valuable, but the Rambam in Igeres Teiman, it's actually a very interesting context. The Rambam there was a false messiah in Teiman. And the Rambam was writing, how do I know that this fellow that you claim is the Mashiach, or that people are claiming is the Mashiach, is the false Mashiach? And he writes, among other things, because he's foolish. And the Mashiach is a prophet, and a prophet can't be foolish. He writes, I'll read you, "V'echad min ha-tanayim sheyesh etzlenu yeduim l'chol navi, sheyeh betachlis hamada, ve'az yinave oso HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Lefishu ikar etzlenu." It's interesting, the Rambam always refers to this idea as an ikar. I'll show you other places in a moment. But lefishu ikar etzleinu she'ena nevua shoreh elal chacham v'gibor v'ashir uviyaro she'afilu gibor she'yiyakoveshes yitzro. What does it mean, gibor? Does it mean he lifts weights? It means, like the Mishnah in Perkei Avos says, ezu gibor koveshes yitzro. V'ashir is ashir bedato. And he writes, therefore this guy who is foolish, like he told everybody to be mefazer kol memono, can't possibly be a navi. So, at least in the Igeret Teman, the Rambam understands that gibor and ashir are not meant literally, but like the Mishnah in Avos.
What's the distinction between chacham and ashir for the Rambam?
Chacham is chacham b'mada, and gibor... Oh, good question. In other words, it also says chacham. I suppose it's probably the difference between knowing things and being intelligent. So that's it's a good ha'ara, meaning to say the pashup shot in the Gemara Nedarim that derives it from the staff and the like, from the stones, does seem to indicate otherwise. Be that as it may, certainly with respect to Chachma, the Rambam thinks this is an Iker. Every time the Rambam talks about Nevuah, he makes this point. In the Yud Gimel Ikari Emuna, he makes this point. He writes that the sixth of the 13 beliefs is the belief in prophecy. V'hu ladash shezeh min anoshi yesh shehimatzu bo ishim ba'alei kishronos mefutachim me'od v'shleimus gadol v'titchonen nafsham ad shemekabelas tzuras haseichel, etc., etc. This is because the Rambam sees Nevuah as almost a natural process. It's not entirely natural. The Rambam also writes it's tchila voda and sofa matana, like the Mesil Sisharim, but it's the next step after a certain level of perfection. And therefore, it's only possible if a person has reached a certain state. Likewise, in Hilchos Yisodi HaTorah, in Parak Zayin, he writes, Miyisodo Sadas, Leida Shehael Minave El Bnei Adam, Ve'ena Nevua Chala El Al Chacham Gadol B'Chachma Gibor B'Midosav, Ve'lo Yia Yitzro Mizgaber Alav, B'davar Olam, etc., etc. Baal Deya Nechona Ad Me'od. In fact, the Rambam in Mor Nevuchim in Beis Lamed Beis writes that there are some foolish people who think that it's possible for prophecy to be achieved even for someone who hasn't reached this level of perfection. And he writes that the possibility of an unperfected person receiving prophecy is equivalent to thinking that a frog could prophecy. So they're equally impossible. So if so, what then does it mean that Klal Yisrael heard Anochi and Loyia, the Gemara and Makos? It seems unlikely that all of Klal Yisrael would have reached this Madrega where Nevuah would have been possible. So the Rambam basically writes that it means that the truth of the first two commandments, namely the existence of God and His unity, can be derived independently using logic. Thus, there is no need to rely upon prophecy to arrive at these principles. Our knowledge is equivalent to that of the prophet in the sense that it is direct knowledge. So as where it, with respect to other mitzvos, where we know of these mitzvos because we heard them from Moshe, we received them from an intermediary, they're not direct. Our knowledge of Anochi and Lo Yia is in fact direct. The reason being, because it could be ascertained through logic. The Rambam writes, take a look on page 38. V'hu Amram, I'm reading where it's bolded, Anochi v'lo Yia mepi agvura shema'um. Rotzim bazeh, shehem higiu eilehem, kimo shigiu Moshe Rabbeinu. Our knowledge of Anochi is the same as Moshe's knowledge of Anochi. V'lo haya Moshe Rabbeinu alav ha-shalom magiyem eilehem. V'zeh sh'shtei elu ha-sharashim ratzolomar Mitzius Ha'el Yisborach V'Heyoso Echad Amnam Yusag B'Iyun Ha'Enoshi. They could be derived through human understanding. V'chol Mash Yodeh B'Mofes. Anything that is known through proof. Mofes in the medieval sense of the word refers to proof. Mishpat Hanavi Bo U'Mishpat Kol Mishi Yedaehu Shaveh. There is no difference between the Navi and everyone else. Ein Yisron, there's no advantage of the prophet. V'lo Nod O Shnei Hasharashim Ha'Ela Mitzad HaNevuah Bil Levad Amra Torah Ata Horeis Al Adas. The pasuk says, Ata you Horeis Al Adas Ki Hashem Hu'Elokim, because you are able to prove it as well. Parenthetically, the Meshech Chachma uses this Rambam to answer a fascinating question that the Ramban asks on the Rambam's proof. Remember, the Rambam proved that Anochi is a mitzvah and Lo Yeh is a mitzvah from the Gemara in Makos. That Anochi and Lo Yeh mipiak vur shma'anum. So the Ramban in Sefer Mitzvah says that that is not a good proof, because if so, you should count it as five mitzvahs. He says, V'im kol zeh ra'isi l'bal holcho shelo yimneh usa mitzvah b'chlal taryag uvedibur lo yeh lecha minios rabos lo yeh lecha lo sase lo sishtachaveh lehem v'lo sa'avdeim v'im kain yeh mipi agvura chamesh u'mipi moshe shesh meos v'shmoneh lo minyan Torah. He says the Gemara in Makos is an asmachta. It's not meant literally, because if it was, so then we should count five mitzvos, because there are five mitzvos that emerge from Anochi and Lo Yeh, and yet it's Torah Tzivalanu Moshe, 6:11. So the Meshech Chachma points out, if you understand this like the Rambam in the Mor Nevuchim, it's not a kash at all. It doesn't mean the words of Anochi and Lo Yeh, which indeed do contain five mitzvos. It means the principles behind Anochi and Lo Yeh, namely Mitzios Hashem Yisborach and Achduso, so that is what's referred to as Mipi Agvuram. Now, you might be wondering that this contradicts the earlier statement that we mentioned from the Rambam in Hilchos Yisodei HaTorah, where the Rambam actually said that our knowledge that the Torah is true is because of Ma'amad Har Sinai, and specifically what we heard. The Rambam writes over there that it wasn't simply that we witnessed a miracle, but that we actually heard HaKadosh Baruch Hu talk. Well, didn't the Rambam over here say we didn't hear HaKadosh Baruch Hu talk? So first of all, it's important to note another thing the Rambam writes in Mor Nevuchim, Beis Lamed Gimel, that it's impossible for any person to expound upon the revelation of Har Sinai. It's one of the secrets of the Torah. It's not something that we could fully grasp. But to the extent possible, I think a careful reading of the Rambam illustrates that the Rambam is actually perfectly consistent in his two points. The Rambam in Hilchos Yisodei HaTorah doesn't say that the reason why we believe in Torah and Moshe is because we heard Anochi and Lo Yeh. He writes that it's because we heard the Kol. Right? The Rambam writes, Bameh aminu bo, b'mamad har Sinai, she'enenu ra'u v'lo zar, v'oznenu shamu v'lo acher, ha'esh v'akolos v'alipidim, v'hu nigash el ha'arafel, v'hakol medaber elav, v'anu shomim. Now, what is this Kol? So the Rambam in Mor Nevuchim explains that the Kol is this undifferentiated voice. Apparently, even if a person is not able to reach the level of prophecy, they're still able to, Klal Yisrael were able to perceive or to hear this kol. And it was this kol, not the words Anochi Hashem Elokecha, but the kol that gave them absolute and incontrovertible knowledge that Moshe the Torah so emes. And that's why the Rambam doesn't write in Hilchos Yisodei HaTorah that we heard Anochi. He writes and he stresses that we heard the Kol. Now, it's even fascinating because the Rambam goes one step further. He writes that, what did we hear? We heard the Kol. V'anu shomim Moshe Moshe leich emor lahem kach v'kach. And that's what is meant by panim b'panim diber Hashem imachem. Now, what does that mean? We heard Lech Emor Lahem Kach, Moshe Moshe Lech Emor Lahem Kach V'Kach. It's a very strange thing to write because it's not a pasuk. It doesn't say anywhere in the Torah that we heard Hashem say, Moshe, Moshe, lech amor lahem kach v'kach. Rambam should say, we heard Anochi Hashem Elokecha. That's what it says in the Gemara in Makos. The answer is no, because we didn't hear Anochi Hashem Elokecha. We heard the kol. But from the kol, we were able to extrapolate, we were able to clearly understand that what this kol was God saying something to Moshe, which Moshe was able to understand and then relate to us. And we could understand that message with certainty, even if we didn't actually hear the words that made up the kol. L'mashal l'ma davar domeh, I could see somebody speaking to another person in Spanish and then say something to me. Now, I could understand that their first person is communicating a message to the second person, even though I don't understand any of the words that they're actually saying. Likewise, we were able to understand from the experience of perceiving the kol, even if it was only undifferentiated words, that God was communicating a message to Moshe to tell us. And that's what the Rambam says that we heard, Moshe, Moshe, lech emor lahem kach v'kach. It's not those words per se, probably, but the concept of communication. Be that as it may, what you see here is the following. We're running late. I'll take questions later. We could take questions afterwards without being in a rush, because I think the second class is canceled. So the Rambam is telling us the importance of proof, going back to the Iker point from Mor Nevuchim, that proof is important even for the person who is already a believer. Proof is not just important for someone who does not yet believe, but even for the believer, because knowledge, which is based off of proof, is categorically different than knowledge which is not based off of proof, insofar as knowledge based off of proof is firsthand. It is direct knowledge. And that is why seeking proof, to the extent possible, is so important. As I mentioned, the Mor Nevuchim does present a number of proofs, and the proof that he refers to in the Mishneh Torah a number of times, we saw it in Hilchos Avodah Zarah just now, as well as in Hilchos Yisodei HaTorah that we referred to earlier, the idea that HaKadosh Baruch Hu must exist based off of the fact that the Galgalim are spinning. This proof is fully developed in Mor Nevuchim in 26 steps. And regarding this proof, he writes, this is on your source book, the bottom of page 38, going on to 39, 25 of the propositions which are employed in the proof for the existence of God, or in the arguments demonstrating that God is neither corporeal nor a force connected with material being, or that he is one, have been fully established and are beyond doubt. So, 25 of the propositions that make the proof are clear. Not just proof for God, his incorporeality, and his... However, one of the 26 assumptions in the proof is, in fact, questionable. Now, first glance, this is very striking. A proof which is based off of a questionable assumption is not a very powerful proof. He writes, Aristotle and those who followed him have proven each of these propositions, meaning each of the 25, but not the 26th. There is, however, one proposition which we do not accept. So one out of the 26 proofs we, meaning the Rambam, does not think is true. Namely, the proposition which affirms the eternity of the universe. But we will admit it for the present, because by doing so, we shall be enabled to clearly demonstrate our own theory. Aristotle believed in the eternity of matter, meaning to say that the world or the universe was not created, but that it always existed. His position was widely accepted in medieval times by philosophers. And interestingly enough, both the Rambam and the Ramban write that a major purpose of the Torah is to combat this belief. The Rambam in Mor Nevuchim, Aleph Nun, the Ramban, for example, in Drashas, Taras Hashem Tamima, state that the a core belief of the Torah and a core belief that the Torah seeks to eradicate is belief in the eternity of matter. In Mor Nevuchim, Beis Yud Gimel, he writes that it is the foundation of the entire Torah. It is undoubtedly the fundamental principle of our law and our teacher, Moshe. It is next in importance to the principle of God's unity. In fact, the Rambam writes that in this week's Parsha, Parshas HaShavua, when Avram Avinu calls out in the name of Kel Olam, Perek Chaf Aleph, Pasuk Lamed Gimel, Rambam understands that is exactly what Avram was teaching the world when he was teaching the world Kel Olam. He was teaching the world that God created the world, not just that he exists, but that he is the creator. So if it is the case, then, that creation, or the rejection of Aristotle's theory that matter is eternal, is so important, is the cornerstone of the belief in Torah, why then is it that he presumes the opposite in his proof for the existence of God? And the answer is quite simple, as the Rambam himself explains. First of all, if you assume that the world is created, meaning to say that matter is not eternal, so then you're already assuming that God exists. There's no need for a proof. The Rambam goes ahead and says, even l'shitascha, even you who presume that the world is eternal, I could still prove that God exists and is incorporeal. L'shitascha, l'shitasi, I don't need this. But l'shitascha, even according to you, those who follow Aristotle and accept the eternity of the universe, in which case, at first glance, it would seem plausible that you could deny the existence of God, because after all, why does anything exist? Because it always existed. So even l'shitascha, I'm going to prove that God exists. That is one reason why he presumes the eternity of matter in his proofs. The second reason is because the other 25 of the propositions in his proof could actually be proven. Creation, the Rambam maintains, cannot be proven. Earlier, we mentioned that even the Rambam distinguishes between Yediya and Emuna. When it comes to God's existence, there is Yediya, because it can be proven. When it comes to creation, perhaps there's only emuna. The Rambam believes that is the most compelling of the various options, but he acknowledges that definitive proof cannot be offered. And therefore, the Rambam writes that for my proof for the existence of God to be ironclad, I want every one of the presumptions made in the proof to be provable, definitively. And therefore, he says, I'm going to grant the eternity of matter in order that my proof for the existence of God be ironclad. But that's not to say that the Rambam did not believe in it, that he doubted it. The Rambam's belief in creation was certain. Nevertheless, he presumes otherwise for the sake of giving a strong proof. We'll talk about another time why it is that the Rambam was so certain that the world was created. But for now, we'll take him at his word. Thus, the Rambam writes in a number of places that whenever I refer to proof, in fact, even in the, just take a look at the page 39, the bottom paragraph. For this reason, you will find in my works on the Talmud, meaning the Mishneh Torah, whenever I speak of the fundamental principles of our religion, or to prove the existence of God, that I employ arguments that imply the eternity of the universe. He says the same thing in the Yud Gimel Ikar Yamuna, at least in the Madur Basra, in the Kapach edition. He's referring to the halachos that we saw earlier today, Hilchos Yisodei HaTorah and Hilchos Avodah Zarah, where he refers to the Galgal Sovev Tamid, which would imply that matter is eternal, And he makes that presumption for the sake of proof, but not because he thinks it's correct. You see that also in the bottom of page 39. Now, it's important to note, since we're talking a lot about proof today, that the Rambam does not believe that proof is absolutely essential for fulfilling the mitzvah of Anochi Hashem Elokecha. The Rambam writes, for example, in Mor Nevuchim Aleph Nun on the top of page 40, that one fulfills the mitzvah of Anochi as long as one knows with certainty that God exists, even if one is unable to prove it. He also writes that it emerges from the palace analogy in chapter Nun as well. At the end. The Rambam writes the following. He begins by noting that simply saying something is not the same as knowing it. When reading my present treatise, bear in mind that by faith, now the word faith is here, this is actually from the Pinas translation, Kapach and would translate this and does translate this as yedia, not emuna. Bear in mind that by faith we do not understand merely that which is uttered with the lips, but also that which is apprehended by the soul, the conviction that the object of belief is exactly as it is apprehended. Meaning to say, the Rambam writes, some people will say things without actually understanding what they mean or their implications. They will say Shema Yisrael as if the object of the Torah was to seek forms of expression, not subjects of belief. And the Rambam writes, this is wrong. For belief is only possible after the apprehension of a thing. It consists in the conviction that the thing apprehended has its existence beyond the mind in reality, exactly as it is conceived in the mind. So if a person were to correctly say that God is one, but not understand the direct implications of that which they are saying, then they've essentially accomplished nothing. Now, what does he mean, you don't understand the implications of what you're saying? So the Rambam, for example, writes that a corollary of God's oneness is that he has no attributes. Because attributes would imply multiplicity. There is him and his oneness. Sorry, there is him and his attributes. The truth is it's a little more complex. If they're accidental attributes, so then they're problematic because it implies change. If they are non-essential, if they are definitional, so then it implies that there are these characteristics besides him. There is him and his mercy. And the Rambam spends a lot of time in Mor Nevuchim, Chelak Aleph, Prakim Nun, Tusamech, explaining and elaborating on this concept. But let's say a person goes ahead and he says Shema, but he believes that God has attributes, that when it says Rachum v'chanun erech apayim, it doesn't mean to describe the way in which he acts, but the way in which he is. So he writes, thus, those who believe that God is one and he has many attributes declare unity with their lips and assume plurality in their thoughts. He goes so far as to compare this to Christians. It is like the doctrine of the Christians who say that he is one and that he is three, and that three are one. In other words, it makes no sense. So, when we talk about belief, while proof is not necessary, it's also not enough to simply say it. You have to understand it. There has to be a correlation between that which you say and that which you perceive in your heart. The Rambam writes, belief, again, top of page 40, belief is only possible after the apprehension of a thing. It consists in the conviction that the thing apprehended has its existence in reality exactly as it is conceived in the mind. If, in addition to this, we are convinced that the thing cannot be different in any way from what we believe it to be, and that no reasonable argument could be found for the rejection of the belief or for the admission of any deviation from it, then there is true belief. So while proof is not necessary, certainty is necessary. Proof is something that someone should strive for if someone is capable of it. It's not necessary, but the basic understanding of that which we are saying is necessary for emunah. Now I'd like to go, since we're about out of time, and consider two points very briefly that relate to what we've said. The first point relates to the role of proof and these types of proofs, the teleological argument today. And the second point relates to the requirement that emuna have certainty. Both points that were just made by the Rambam. We saw that the Medrash assumes that Avram Avinu came to an understanding of God's existence because Yefshar Labira Lablo Manhig, that many thinkers, the Rambam, the Chovos Alvavos, and others, prove the existence of God through this type of argument. And the question is, in the post-Kantian world, are these types of proofs still relevant? There are thinkers who claim that essentially they're not. First of all, the philosophical rejection of the medieval proofs has been made by others. The 19th century thinkers like Hume questioned the argument of causation or the causal principle that's at the root of this type of argument. And Kant tried to argue that the cosmological proof rests upon an ontological argument, which he questions. And therefore, basically, these types of proofs are no longer valid. Contemporary science has offered an alternative in which evolution accounts for the existence of life, and therefore we no longer can or should turn to these types of arguments. And therefore, religious thinkers have argued that we have to turn to other methods of arriving at emuna, experiential knowledge, and other factors, and we're going to consider that next week, God willing, when we study the perspective of the Kuzari, God willing. And there are indeed very powerful reasons to believe in the existence of God besides these types of proofs. But the question is, what about these types of proofs? Is there any room for them anymore? Are they still here or there? All of you will probably be asked at some point in your life by people, how do you know God exists? Why do you believe in God? So it's important to be able to formulate a response, even if intuitively we are confident and firm in our own belief. It's interesting that even though many have argued that in the 20th century and with modern science, these types of proofs, we no longer have to turn to God to account for the universe or the world or all the miraculous things that seem to exist, the opposite case could also be made. And this relates to the point that we were just discussing in the Rambam, when the Rambam discussed the question of the eternity of matter. You see, until the middle of the 20th century, one could simply deny the existence of God and account for the existence of the universe by saying that the universe always existed. The eternity of matter. Why is there a universe? There was always a universe. Don't tell me if there's a universe, there must be a creator. Because it always existed. That's, by the way, why the Rambam had to turn to the spheres and made it a little more complicated. But since the middle of the 20th century, science has more or less, and again, I'm not a physicist, and this is not something that I know much about, but my impression, my understanding is that there has been more or less universal acceptance of the idea that there is a beginning to the universe, the Big Bang, or whatever you wish to call it, that it started at a certain point. And there's a lot of evidence to this, radiation and the amount of mass that's in the universe and the like. And this is something that's more or less no longer debated by scientists, the details of which might be debated, the exact nature we don't know. But the idea that there was a beginning, that something started it all, is something that is largely accepted. And in that sense, it's easier to prove now that God exists than it ever was. In fact, with all that modern science has taught us, there are still many questions that cannot be answered by science. First and foremost, why does anything exist? What started the process, and what caused our universe to come into existence? Again, the Big Bang Theory does not answer this question. Rather, it describes the process in which our universe developed after the Big Bang, or starting with the Big Bang. But what triggered the Big Bang is not addressed. Likewise, evolution does not address these questions. It seeks to explain how life on Earth could naturally evolve, but it does not consider why the Earth exists. Even if one were to get over that hump and explain how somehow the existence of the world can exist independently of God, there are other questions for which there is no answer. There's no evidence, for example, that life can evolve, that anything can go from inanimate to animate. There is a famous questionable experiment about an electric current that was run through a soup of organic molecules in which amino acids were formed, but that doesn't explain the evolution of life. And in fact, amino acids are chemicals. There's never been an experiment which has shown how life could be created, how we could go from inanimate to animate. Likewise, there's no theory that explains the evolution of consciousness. I think, by the way, these types of arguments are stronger, though, than arguments like the irreducible complexity of the human eye, because when it comes to something like the evolution of consciousness, there's not even a model that can explain it. There's no theory as to why certain things will go mental. So this sort of evidence, or these types of questions, are questions that have not been answered. Now, what would an atheist say about this? There are plenty of very intelligent atheists. What would they, and how would they respond to these types of questions? So, if you look, for example, in Richard Dawkins' book, The God Delusion, he addresses this question. And he says that these types of questions support the existence of what he calls the God of the gaps. That term didn't actually originate with him. It was developed by a German theologian, Dietrich Bonhoeffer, who was actually killed by the Nazis. Anyhow, he wrote, "How wrong is it to use God as a stopgap for the incompleteness of our knowledge? If, in fact, the frontiers of knowledge are being pushed farther and farther back, and that is bound to be the case, then God is being pushed back with them, and therefore will continually retreat. We are to find God in what we know, not in what we don't know." This was actually written by a believer. But his point was that if our knowledge of God's existence depends on the questions that science is unable to answer, then as science learns more and more and is able to answer more and more questions, then the place of God will shrink. And therefore, this isn't a very good approach to proving God. In other words, he'll admit that, yes, There are things that I can't answer. I'm an atheist. There are questions that I can't answer. But I'm confident, he writes. I'm confident that these questions will be answered. He has a lot of emunah, not in God, but in science. He writes, this is from a different one of his books, where did I put that? The Blind Watchmaker. Cumulative selection, once it has begun, seems powerful enough to make the evolution of intelligence probable, if not inevitable. Things like seems powerful enough don't sound very scientific. But leaving that aside, I think that this question, this question of the God of the Gaps, is not a particularly compelling question. These types of questions are not questions that science even begins to have an explanation for. It's not simply that there are a certain phenomena that happens in a cell and we don't understand why or how it happens, where perhaps we could confidently state that it seems likely that in the coming decades we'll have an answer. These types of questions are not, these gaps are not just minor holes, but they seem to be major questions. Now, is it possible that answers will be developed? Maybe. And I don't know. And as we'll talk about next week, I think that faith in the modern world shouldn't rest entirely on these types of things. But at the same time, while these types of arguments and questions don't perhaps answer in the same conclusive fashion that syllogistic proofs, the ones that Rambam offers, do, it certainly can leave the believer with a lot of confidence that their belief in God, in fact, their knowledge of God's existence, is something that is quite rational, and in fact, possibly the only rational conclusion. Now, what about if someone says, well, I demand absolute proof. I'm not going to believe until you can definitively prove that God exists. So first of all, one question that a person like that should consider is, are they being epistemologically consistent? Meaning to say, is this the attitude that they have with respect to other things that they believe in? Is this the manner in which they approach other questions? There's a couple of good books on this topic by Richard Swinburne. One is called, this is a shorter version, Is There a God? It's published by Oxford University Press. He's a professor in Oxford, and he writes about rational and philosophical reasons to believe in the existence of God. But one of the things he notes is, at the end of his book, is that even though the types of proofs that he offers, he essentially tries to offer inductive cosmological arguments as opposed to the type of deductive cosmological arguments that we considered in the Rambam. And he writes that even if it's true that they are not as potent as a deductive proof, at the same time, are these those who question them, are they questioning them? Is this the type of thing that they ask about other things? One final point. Rav Dessler writes that, an interesting point, this relates again to what we discussed last week, but it's something to consider. This is in Chelek Gimel 100, page 177. Tos gedola, tos hi lachshov, shiyacholim lasig es ha'emunah ha'muchletes al yedei chakiros, sichlios ufilosofia. Harei ha'seichel mishuchad, al yedei kol minei negios, like we saw last week, haratzon mates ha'seichel la'an shehu chafetz. Kshe'adam pone el sichlo, b'terem hisamek batorah, uviseis es emunaso al kabalas avos v'chachamim, v'rotzeh she'sichlo yashofet habiladi al inyanei emunah. If a person says, I'm only going to believe if I have proof, simanhu she'eno rotzeh la'amin, lachen pone el shofet mishuchad shiore lo kirtzono. Another way to think of this is a very fascinating point. You know, it is fascinating that a person, even today, can turn to science and say, see in science proof or evidence for the existence of God, and at the same time, a person could go ahead and say, I don't believe in God because of science. There are plenty of people that choose each of these two paths. And it's a little striking at first. Why is it that science can yield both conclusions? Now, part of the problem is perhaps a misunderstanding of what science is. But even leaving that aside, I think it's interesting to note that this is not a new phenomenon. The Pasuk in Dvarim Perek Daled writes, Pentisai necha shamayma, viraisa es ha-shemesh, v'esayareach, v'esakochavim, kol tzva shamayim, v'nidachta b'shtachavisa lahem. Lest you raise your eyes heavenwards and see the sun, the moon, the stars, and turn and serve them. The act of looking to the heavens is one that could lead one away from God and towards the belief in Avodah Zarah. At the same time, Yeshayahu writes, Se'u marom einechem ure'u mivara eila. The very same words, pen tisai necha shamayma, se'u marom einechem. The very same activity, looking at the heavens. But yet, this activity could yield two diametrically opposite results. It could bring one to belief in God and could turn one away from belief in God. The same thing is true with respect to science. The difference is really one of perspective. And since we're well over our time limit, I won't be able to elaborate upon that now, but perhaps we'll return to that question a little more next week when we consider other perspectives on the mitzvah of emunah. Have a good Shabbos. I'm happy to take questions now.
So to name the book on Oxford University Press, I didn't hear the...